You're listening to the Full Press Coverage Fantasy Football Podcast with your host, Andrew Erickson.
What's up, guys? This is Andrew Erickson here, back again for another episode of the Full Press Coverage Fantasy Football Podcast. And today we have a really big episode. I'm continuing my 32 teams in 32 days segment, but instead of, you know, doing one team usually per episode, I'm actually going to be doing 7 teams in today's episode. So we're going to be covering a lot of different teams, a lot of information. Break out the pens and paper. You want to be amped up for this for sure because it's going to be a wild ride. So we're going to start off with the first team here. We'll get right into it, guys. The Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, a bunch of different guys. You know, for fantasy, this is kind of what I'm looking at. But first, I'll start off with kind of my notes from the preseason game that they last played. So essentially, you saw Rodgers locking into Devontae Adams really early on in that game. Jimmy Graham caught a red zone touchdown, and that's kind of the big debate. Is Jimmy Graham going to continue to be a big red zone guy in Green Bay? And what I think is yes. I think that Jimmy Graham will be very effective in Green Bay and part of that offense. People have always said, you know, Rodgers doesn't use a tight end. Basically, he used Jericho Finley when he was back, when he was back there before. But, some statistics, we were able to look at basically go into predicting a lot of good things for Aaron Rodgers. So, basically, in 11 personnel, so one running back, one tight end, and three wide receivers, in that formation of personnel, Aaron Rodgers targeted the tight end 81% of the time in 2017 and an 88% of the time in 2016 within that formation. 66% is the NFL average for targeting the tight end in that formation. So what's kind of going to happen here is that's a formation that's very commonly used in the Packers offense is the 11 personnel. So when within the 11 personnel, Aaron Rodgers is going to use Jimmy Graham a lot. He's going to force him the ball, especially in the red zone. I don't expect Jimmy Graham to be a yardage monster, but I do expect Jimmy Graham to be a red zone guy. Like a lot of people have slotted him in. So, he's a great guy in best ball, but if you draft him in fantasy, in the 5th, 6th round, his average ADP right now is he is going as the tight end 5 in about the 5th or 6th round. If that is the case, then you're going to have to live with the weeks that he blows up and the weeks that he is a dud, because you cannot afford to bench him on weeks where he scores 3 touchdowns, because that could really be any week. So even if he's killed you the last couple of weeks, you have to stay, with him. And he's a big DFS guy. Like, he's going to have really big weeks. It's going to be tough to predict sometimes probably, but he will be a guy that has a very high floor or very high ceiling at the tight end position. Moving to the next guy on the Packers, talking about Devontae Adams. So Devontae Adams is the number one wide receiver on the Green Bay Packers offense. Very favorable situation, and I think it's someone you want to definitely buy. I think he's a very safe floor with a very high ceiling, along with the rest of the Packers offense, going with the running back position. So you got Jamal Williams, you got Aaron Jones, you got Ty Montgomery. So who do you want to target? And they're basically all kind of going in the same place. You have Jamal Williams going as the RB36, you have Ty Montgomery going as the RB42, and you have Aaron Jones going as the RB41. They're kind of meshed together in a cluster of cheese, for the Green Bay fans. But for me, the target, I kind of see it in a couple different ways. I see Montgomery as that happy medium between the two. I don't think Montgomery has the highest ceiling out of the three, but I don't think Montgomery has the lowest floor. I think that those situations fall into Williams or Jones, because I don't think that Montgomery having a role negatively affects either Jones or Williams, so they can't have a role. But I think that, so I'm saying that two of these guys can exist in unison, not all three, and not Jones and Williams. Their skill sets are too similar in terms of being the first and down back. We know that Ty Montgomery can't do that. And basically what we've seen is Aaron Jones is the more explosive one, whereas Jamal Williams is the more of a plotter, in between the tackles type of guy. So I personally like Aaron Jones. You can get him cheaper. He is cheaper. They're both Jones and Montgomery are cheaper. I got them in the Scott Fishbowl. Shout out, wearing my Scott Fishbowl shirt. I got both Aaron Jones and Ty Montgomery late. I kind of went with a zero RB approach, so I got them later in my drafts, and I'm excited for those guys. I think that if Aaron Jones can, if Jamal Williams doesn't prove that he's the starter in the first 2 weeks, then that could go back to Aaron Jones. So I do like that, targeting those guys, especially Aaron Jones, more explosive of a player than Jamal Williams. So I do like him a little bit more than Ty Montgomery or than Jamal Williams. But I do like Ty Montgomery as that kind of in that pass catching work. But then, you know, going back again to the 11 personnel thing with Jimmy Graham, just want to touch on one last thing. So basically, how many throws out of 11 personnel were there from Aaron Rodgers? 91% the last two seasons is he's throwing the ball in 11 personnel. So there is going to be a lot of targets going to Jimmy Graham, especially in the red zone, especially at 11 personnel, because he's going to be that starting tight end on the field. And in that, when you know when he targeted the tight end the last two seasons, 110 passer rating. So a lot of good things could be happening for Jimmy Graham in Green Bay. Other things as well, you know, looking at their schedule, the Packers actually have the easiest schedule in the NFC. So not surprising that, you know, the NFC is very – a lot – has a much more difficult schedule than AFC teams because the NFC is stacked as opposed to the AFC. And in the other notes from the game, Jake Kumerow is a guy that's kind of emerging. I mean, I'm trying to, you know, swipe him in a dynasty league. I mean, it's always really hard, but the thing is that Aaron Rodgers usually doesn't adjust with rookie wide receivers. You know, if you look at the numbers, you know, Nelson, Jennings, James Jones, all those guys as rookies never really produced. Jake Kumerow is not a rookie. So that is something that I do see as an edge, and the same thing with Geronimo Allison. A guy I really like Geronimo Allison, getting him late because he's already been in the offense once, which is why I like his experience. I'm kind of fading off Randall Cobb a little bit. He's been dealing with some injuries, and I'm not still sure he's extremely healthy. So I think that Geronimo Allison's really the guy to target. Cobb has not been reliable, so I'm not really into him as much, especially his ADP is wide receiver 38. You can get Allison so much later. And I think I'd rather do with that, you know, a guy that's, you know, shown that he could be a little more healthy and is going to, a guy that's going to play on the outside anyway, not necessarily in that slot receiver role. That being said, Aaron Rodgers going as the quarterback one overall, you really can't go wrong with him. Me personally, I don't believe that he'll finish as the number one quarterback. I have Cam Newton as my number one quarterback in fantasy football this season, just because I think that Cam has, you know, his a plethora of weapons at him. And the one thing about Aaron Rodgers is he never finishes a QB1 or a QB2 without Jordy Nelson. The one season Jordy Nelson went down, he finishes QB7. So it's just one reason for it. It's not necessarily – I mean, Rodgers is still going to probably finish at least top three. But in terms of, hey, you know, I like Cam Newton's upside. So it's not so much that Aaron Rodgers won't finish number one. I think that someone might be able to leapfrog him going into the season. But still, he's definitely locked in as at least top three at the position. So moving right from the Packers to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Duval. So you have Leonard Fournette, running back. He's going to get so much volume this season. Currently going as the... I'll get to that soon, where he's going. But some of my notes from the preseason games and just notes overall. So they have an easy schedule, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Their schedule is not as easy as it was last year because they won the division, so they're facing all the first teams. But they do have a very easy schedule, especially at the running back position. So it's going to be Fournette, Fournette, Fournette. Fournette is going to get a lot of volume this season. Tons of carries. And something to notice as well, he's an underrated pass catcher. A lot of people talk about him and how that he doesn't catch passes. He's not a dynamic pass catcher, but that's not really true. He actually had the most targets at the running back position last year, more than T.J. Yeldon, more than Corey Grant last season. So I think it's a little underrated and a little close-minded of someone to say, you know, hey, he doesn't really catch passes. It's not really true. You just look at the numbers. He does actually, you know, he's had a lot of targets, or he's had more targets on the running back position for the Jacksonville Jaguars last season. Other things to note as well, so the receiving group. So you have every single beat writer has talked up every single receiver here. Keelan Cole, DeeDee Westbrook, DJ Chark, Dante Moncrief. I even tweeted something out about, like, who do you think is going to be the number one fantasy receiver? And it was basically kind of a four-way split. And then some people even typed in Moncrief because I couldn't fit him as one of the options. Or Marcus Lee. So for me, it's Keelan Cole. We saw Keelan Cole. Keelan Cole was like one of the top scoring producers with DeAndre Hopkins last season, Antonio Brown last season at the end of the year. You know, when you get put into a situation with those guys, it makes me stand out a little bit more than, you know, Marcus Lee, who, okay, he's like okay, but, you know, his reception perception is terrible for Matt Harmon. It's basically all red, and I just don't think he's that great of a receiver. I mean, think about it. He was behind Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson, who were both better than him, and they got rid of both of those guys. So I don't think that they were like, oh, like, we have Marcus Lee, so we're going to let the Allens walk. I think they were like, oh, we have, you know, Westbrook and Hurn or Cole, and now we drafted this Chark kid. Like, I think that we'll be good with those guys. I think Marcus Lee's more of a, like, situational player. I don't think he's a player that's going to really be a focus of an offense, whereas like a Keelan Cole, Westbrook, you know, take the top off the ball, going deep downfield. I think they can actually be primary X receivers where Lee plays a lot of the slot. I mean, Keelan Cole, you know, yards per target, number two overall, 12.2 last season, 101 passer rating from Blake Bortles when he was targeting him. So he has the potential, I think, to really break out. It's just all about, you know, the opportunity and if he's in the starting role. But there is a lot of talk in Jacksonville about all the different receivers. But for me, it's Keelan Cole. That's who I'm putting my mark on as my guy. But I do think that Leonard Fournette has a chance to lead the team in carries this season. And based on his ADP, which is our running back 9, that's where he's at as at the ADP position. I think that he's going for a good value. Get him at the back end of the round. So even if you miss on one of the big four, you know, big five guys, like, you know, Fournette's still a guy you can get super late. You can get the end of the first round, and you're still going to have a running back that can finish top five for sure. I mean, he played 13 games last year, and he finished in the top 10. He missed 3 games. So, I mean, he's a beast. He's going to get a lot of volume this go-around this season. But the other ADPs to look at as well. So, Austin Seferian-Jenkins is the tight end 20. Marcus Lee's wide receiver 48. Westbrook's wide receiver 72. Cole's wide receiver 76. Moncrief's wide receiver 81. I mean, like I said, they're all going so late. ASJ is interesting. They haven't really featured the tight end position so much in Jacksonville, so he's not a guy I'm particularly targeting. I think there's a couple guys with more upside, but he did play pretty well with the Jets. He had a lot of touchdowns reversed, so he's actually probably would have scored a lot more points. But he's just, you know, another guy that you can probably target later in your drafts. But I would probably target a more high volume offense. This is more about to be a running offense through Leonard Fournette. So Austin Seferian-Jenkins is a guy I'm not loving to get, but I could definitely see you know getting him as late as a second tight end. You're a tight end later in the drafts, and then Blake Bortles, quarterback 27. Say what you will about Blake Bortles. And he's been a good fantasy quarterback. It's weird to say that, but he's finished, and I believe finished in the top 15 last season, or top 13, excuse me. He finished as the 13th quarterback overall in fantasy last season, which is really weird to say because he just sucks on the field for me personally, at least that's what I believe. But the thing is, he is a good fantasy producer, and it just goes to show you how deep the position is. I'm in a 16-team draft right now, and I'm really thinking about just punting on quarterback. Like, I'm fine with taking, like, I talked about Case Keenum and his schedule. Like, I'm thinking about, like, taking guys like Case Keenum, Josh Allen, and just being like, you know, I can win with anybody at the quarterback position. So we'll see how that pans out. But, you know, another guy I could try to target, Blake Bortles. You know, just play him in good matchups, situational player, and hopefully they fall behind. He has to chuck the ball around the field. So that's kind of the take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Other notes from the game, I mean, Blake Bortles targeting Marcus Lee on his first pass. Fournette was catching passes in the game. Saw him on a screen pass, you know. So once again, he's making plays in the passing game. Don't be like, oh, he can't catch passes. He's not a complete running back. He is. He's a complete running back. He can do it all. He's got also wheels. And then Bortles, of course, threw a terrible interception to Harrison Smith. That I'm just like, ugh, that's Bortles for you. So unless you play in like a negative 8 or 10 interception league, then Blake Bortles is a guy you can target and get him late. But if there's like a league where you get destroyed for interceptions, Blake Bortles may be one guy that you fade off of. But speaking of interceptions and increases in them, go to the Kansas City Chiefs. So we are moving on from the Alex Smith-led Chiefs, Mr. You know, floor, Mr. Consistency, to the high-flying Patrick Mahomes, gunslinging Brett Favre-ian Kansas City Chiefs of new. And the interesting part about this is about how the Chiefs were going to plan to win. Because Andy Reid, you know, love him to death, the walrus, doesn't care about our fantasy football teams. As much as I would love for him to be like, hey, Andrew, like, this is exactly what you're going to do with your fantasy football team, that's not exactly what's going to happen here. But what we're going to see from the Chiefs this season is essentially they need to help Mahomes not turn the ball over. That's the reason that the Chiefs have been so successful the past couple seasons. It's because Alex Smith has had such a low interception ratio. But the thing is, even if Patrick Mahomes comes into the league as his first season and does the average of the interception rate, so not even like above average or below average, like the average, he's still going to throw significantly more interceptions just because Alex Smith was so good at taking care of the football. So it's going to depend on what the offense does in terms of changing with that in mind. So are they going to be more conservative and try to protect the ball with Mahomes? Or are they going to be like, hey, you know, we're going to take the good with the bad and we're going to sling it? I'm more on the latter side, so I'm not so sure that it'll really help them be a better football team, but they have to play to Mahomes' strengths, which, and unfortunately, can also be a weakness. You know, if he's gunslinger mentality, he's going to throw interceptions. But we'll see, you know, how they do with the running game and that type of aspect there. But other things about the Chiefs, their secondary is terrible. They have a terrible defense going into 2018. They just signed Orlando Scandrick, I believe, and it's worrisome because, you know, this is a guy that was, you know, cut from other teams, cut from the Cowboys, and now he's going to the Chiefs. And then he signed Darrelle Revis last season. They got rid of Marcus Peters. They are kind of mishmashing guys together, and it's going to be interesting to see if they can actually hold up or if it's going to be back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, which for fantasy owners is actually a good thing. I mean, more for Tyreek Hill, more work for Travis Kelce, more work for Sammy Watkins. So speaking of the receivers, Tyreek Hill, you know, for me, I was on Tyreek Hill, then I kind of got off him a little bit because they were talking about the regression and how he can't possibly do what he did again last year. He's got a new quarterback, and Alex Smith was so good at the deep ball, and they signed Sammy Watkins. But then you put on the film, the last preseason game, the dude is being triple coverage. Triple coverage. I saw that triple coverage play, and I immediately thought of that Randy Moss play against the Jets back in 2007, where Randy Moss literally outdoes three defenders and just catches it. That's what that play reminded me of. And you can sit here and stay and be like, well, he's not going to be able to keep it up. He's not going to be able to keep it up. It's like, but, like, what if he, like, does? Like, he's actually, like, doing it. Like, he's doing what Will Fuller, like, wishes he could do, like, consistently. Tyreek Hill is just a freak. He is doing it all. And it's hard to not get excited about him because, yes, where I like the – I mean, my brain is telling me Watkins is the better value. Watkins is going as the wide receiver 29 in the 7th or 8th round, whereas Tyreek Hill is going as the wide receiver 13 in the 3rd or 4th round. Watkins seems like the better value on paper, but when you watch the games, you don't see Mahomes and Watkins having any type of chemistry. You're seeing that chemistry from Tyreek Hill and Patrick Mahomes. You're seeing him getting targeted. You're seeing him in the deep ball. We've seen Watkins – all I've seen from Watkins is drops – And interceptions from Mahomes. But Mahomes threw a pass and got intercepted because he threw it to Sammy Watkins. So it's I still want to stick with Sammy Watkins as my value pick, but I'm not so off of Tyreek Hill as much as I was in terms of seeing him on my draft form. Be like, nah, I want somebody else. I don't really think that you can go wrong. I don't want to say go wrong with Tyreek Hill, but I mean, as a wide receiver one, I may not love that. But I said the same thing again the last time about Todd Gurley last year, and I was like, "That's my RB 1. Like, I don't know if I love that. So maybe I should just love it." But I mean, yeah, that's the thing with the Chiefs. The offense should be more explosive if it's possible. But looking at then the running back position, so Kareem Hunt, who was also kind of involved a lot in the running game as well in the preseason, we're seeing a lot of passes to him, you know, from Mahomes. So I do like that to see. The terms of his backups, I mean, Spencer Ware, like, I don't know where is Spencer Ware exactly? Where is he? I don't know if he's actually healthy. We have a couple other backups in there. So Kerwin Williams, Darrell Williams from LSU, I actually really like. Well, actually, he's a pretty good running back, but he's always been behind Leonard Fournette or Darius Geis. So he's never really had a chance to do anything, and now he's behind Kareem Hunt, so go figure. But I do think that there is a little bit more, because last year they had nobody. Just Kendrick West. All they had was Kendrick West, and I don't think they were going to give him the ball over Kareem Hunt. So I don't know if I see Kareem Hunt necessarily having as many touches as he did last year, because of the added depth at the position that they have. They had no choice last year but to use him. So, and then Kareem Hunt had that dip in production that just frustrated the hell out of me. I had him on one of my teams, and I'm not really into Kareem Hunt this year. He's not my huge guy that I'm into at the running back position. I'd rather have Fournette, I'd rather have Gordon. So Hunt's a guy that I'm not going to see on a lot of my teams. And the new quarterback. We saw Alex Smith. Alex Smith has always been really productive with his running backs. You can say the same thing about Andy Reid, but I do have some worries that there's going to be some regression from Kareem Hunt going into the 2018 season. Travis Kelce is going as the tight end two. Same thing again. He's not a guy I'm not targeting just because I'm not so sure how he'll do with Mahomes. It's a new quarterback. I'm not just, I mean, Alex Smith was a heavy tight end user, and I'm not so sure we're going to see the same thing from Mahomes. So he's the tight end going as a tight end too, not a guy I'm necessarily targeting, but, you know, out of the tight end position, he's still probably going to finish in the top five, but I'm not so sure that he may, it will necessarily be the tight end too, for the Kansas City Chiefs in 2018. Next team here is the Los Angeles Chargers with my running back three overall, Melvin Gordon. I love Melvin Gordon going to 2018 because I love his volume. I love that he is going to get more passing work. He's going to get the red zone work. There's more opportunities in the red zone. There's no Hunter Henry. There is just so much going for Melvin Gordon that he is a guy that's, you know, it's hard to say that he's going to break out, but he's a guy that's, you know, he scored 12 touchdowns over the last two seasons, only running back to do that, after he scored zero his rookie year. So he's somebody that you need to stop overlooking, really. He's going at the back end of the first round, and I'm actually in that 16-team league. I have the 10th pick, so I'm actually hoping that Gordon gets to me there. But I really think that finishing as the RB3 is not out of realm of possibilities. He has the, you know, he already gets all the volume. That's check mark. Basically, all he needs is a little upgrade in efficiency, you know, a couple more red zone touchdowns, and then, you know, if he gets more passing work, then that's how he's going to do it. And his efficiency, I expect to go up because there's been upgrades at the offensive line position, and they haven't really brought in anybody to take away touches. Yes, Austin Eckler has been, you know, unleashed for the Chargers, but, you know, look at this in the last preseason game. 23 snaps that Melvin Gordon was basically, you know, the first team offense was on the field. Melvin Gordon was on the field for 20 of those 23 snaps. He, of those 20 snaps that he had 12 touches and accumulated 13.3 fantasy points with a touchdown, with 12 rushes and, or excuse me, 9 rushes, or no, 10 rushes, excuse me, 10 rushes and 2 receptions and a touchdown. So he was already scoring, I mean, he's already averaging more fantasy points per touch, per snap that he's playing in games. So I mean, he's a guy that I don't get why people are so down on him. And the biggest thing is like, oh, his efficiency is 4.0. It's like less than 4 yards a carry. It's like, yeah, well, when you have so many carries in the red zone, then your yards per carry goes down. Did you know that in between the 20s, Melvin Gordon has the same yards per carry than Le'Veon Bell? It's the same. 4.26 or 4.25. It's the same. And you're not talking about Le'Veon Bell being, oh, well, he's inefficient. It's like, no. It's just because his numbers are technically in flux because he gets 4 carries within the goal line and he gets in. He gets all the goal line work, then, you know, the head running back, the backup there, he got to like the 3-yard line, immediately took him out, put in Melvin Gordon. So please buy Melvin Gordon this season. If you do anything this season, you listen to me, if you listen to anything from me, buy Melvin Gordon this season. I think that he will not let you down. I mean, his floor is like RB5, so I mean, I just think that he's a great play. I think the Chargers are going to be a great team this season. They're a great offense, great defense. They have Phillip Rivers. That's the biggest thing. You know, you look at all these running backs, and you look, okay, like, who's the best quarterback out of this group? So you got Goff from the Rams. So like, looking at the running back quarterback, you know, comparisons, you can make the argument that Melvin Gordon is playing with the best quarterback. So you have, you know, Gurley plays with Goff. You know, David Johnson's with Sam Bradford. Zeke is with Dak. You have Bell with Roethlisberger, and I mean, I'm taking Rivers over Roethlisberger. Roethlisberger has, you know, has had everything work for out for him, and he's yet to really put it all together. I mean, he's had the best running back and best wide receiver arguably, and yet he's like, he still puts up like subpar numbers somehow, and it blows my mind. Like, and then they have like literally an all-pro wide receiver every single season that they can just automatically use. You know, Leonard Fournette, Blake Bortles, Patrick Mahomes for the Chiefs with Kareem Hunt. Then you have Phil Rivers. So, I mean, Melvin Gordon could be technically running back on the number one offense in 2018. So, we saw that with Todd Gurley. He finished as the RB1 last season. So, why can't Melvin Gordon? I'll pick him RB3, but I'm just saying, there's a chance that he finishes RB1 or RB3 in 2018. Other players on the Chargers to talk about, because I just really wanted to talk about Melvin Gordon. Kind of a strategy, actually, really. You know, Phillip Rivers, you know, he's extremely efficient at passing on first down. So I think that that's going to be something that they're going to try to do a little bit more. You know, on first down, Rivers has 115 passer rating. So essentially last year, what happened was they were kept running the ball on first down. It just didn't work. Like, Melvin Gordon's success rate was very poor on first down runs, but Philip Rivers' passing was very high. So I may see them trying to make that type of switch, getting them more involved in the passing game initially, you know, right off the bat, because that also is a telltale sign. You know, switching out a third down running back means, oh, hey, we're going to pass, or hey, we're gonna run the ball. Like, that's why you need backs that can do both. It doesn't make any sense to have backs that, oh, I can't catch passes. It just doesn't add up that way. Now going to the receiver side, Mike Williams is obviously a big sleeper red zone guy. And then you have Keenan Allen, who, you know, we saw last season, Allen led all the receivers in red zone targets, 24 red zone targets last season, but he only had 6 touchdowns. So it's actually a pretty poor, like, margin. And you could argue that Keenan Allen could be in line for some positive regression in terms of touchdowns. You know, Hunter Henry, it was, you know, a big red zone guy last season, but there are 3 basically participants that could then all kind of benefit from his absence, being Melvin Gordon, Keenan Allen, and Mike Williams, as, you know, emerging to, you know, kind of take some of those touchdowns possibly away that would have gone to Hunter Henry in the 2018 season. So I like the Chargers offense for sure. I think that you definitely want to try to get a piece of it anywhere you can. And even with one of the late receivers, you know, Mike Williams, who's going as the wide receiver 59. And then even a guy like Tyrell Williams. Expect that the Chargers will probably run a lot of 11 personnel. So probably Melvin Gordon in the backfield, you know, Allen in the slot or moving around, Mike Williams and Tyrell Williams on the outsides. So a lot of guys, a lot of excitement, I think, about in LA this season. You know, hopefully they can build on what the Rams built there last year. And speaking of those Rams, there they are, Todd Gurley. Most of my information is not, you know, from the preseason games. There really wasn't much that I got from the Rams playing. They didn't really play any of their starters. They essentially, you know, John Kelly was the backup, and he looked, you know, semi-decent. But the biggest thing to point out here is there's probably going to be regression for them. We see this a lot. You know, teams that finish last place, then they have played like a cupcake schedule because they play all the worst teams. And then they go to first, and then they kind of come back down. AAA Dallas Cowboys. And it's something reason, you know, it's one of the reasons I really like Jordan Howard, because they finished in last place, so he's got a really good schedule. So Jordan Howard, another one of my dudes. Melvin Gordon, Jordan Howard, my first 2 picks. Oh my God, I will lose my freaking mind, guys. But that being said, all right, so the Rams. So Gurley's going ADP 1. I think it's overrated. I think he's definitely going to regress. No one scores. I mean, this happens all the time. No running back finishes as the RB1 again. It doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. So I'm not sure why everyone's like, oh yeah, Todd Gurley number 1. Like, be afraid to take a risk. Like, I would rather take Saquon Barkley number 1 overall than Todd Gurley. I have no problem with that. I don't feel like sick about it. Like, I have no problem like not taking Todd Gurley number 1 or number 2. I have a number 1 pick in my draft. I'm taking David Johnson because I think that is the right choice. I don't think it makes sense to just take, oh, we finished first place last year, so he'll finish first place again this year. It's like, no, that makes literally no sense. But that's my 2 cents, just positive regression or negative just regression in general. When you score double-digit touchdowns, it's very hard to still score double-digit touchdowns again. And also, you're going to see, you know, Sean McVay, defenses are going to learn a little bit more about their offense. They're not going to be able to do all the same things. McVay's not going to be able to tell Goff exactly what to do as much. So, in a lot of Gurley's, one of the reasons he was so productive was his passing in the receiving game, something that's not to say you can't duplicate it, but a lot of his big plays necessarily aren't always going to be there. So that's something that is worrisome. I mean, still, he's still ranked in my top 5 running backs, so it's not like I think he's going to be a colossal bust. But I just think that, hey, I think that there are other running backs that will finish ahead of him in 2018. Looking at the wide receivers, Brandon Cooks, Robert Woods, and Cooper Kupp, Jared Goff's favorite target. Cooper Kupp led the team in red zone targets, 24, and similar to the Keenan Allen situation, Cooper Kupp has an amazing opportunity to really get goal line work. It's actually crazy how many touchdowns he didn't score based on the amount of red zone targets he did receive. So I do expect that to definitely increase. And Cooper Kupp is probably my favorite. If I had to rank the receivers in how I like to draft them, or in terms of, you know, how much I like them, it would be Cooper Kupp, Cooks, and then Robert Woods last. So Cooper Kupp's going as the wide receiver 37. Cooks is going as the wide receiver 23. And Robert Woods going as a wide receiver 30. So here's my take on these guys. So Cooper Kupp, I said, you know, about the red zone. So that's why I really like him. And he was one of the – led the team in targets. So Jared Goff loves him. But then you have Cooks. So Cooks' last three seasons has finished as the wide receiver 13, the wide receiver 9, and the wide receiver 15. But it becomes weird because you're like, oh, well, and the argument for me is like, oh, well, so many got weapons. They got Gurley. They got Woods. They got – yeah, but, like, that's how it was in New Orleans. That's how it was in New England. There's always a bunch of weapons and – so I don't buy that he can't finish. I think at his value where you're drafting Cooks, I think that he will definitely at least be a wide receiver too. So I don't think that you're going to draft Cooks and be like, oh, like that was a busted pick. I don't think that's going to happen. I could see him not being a wide receiver one, but as a wide receiver 23, I definitely think that you're going to get your money's worth. You're going to get your value for him, and he's going to have those blow-up weeks that you're really glad you had him on your team because he's a guy who could probably win you a week. Versus a guy like a Golden Tate who's going a little bit higher that really doesn't have that type of upside. He's more of a floor guy, but even if you know, comparing the two guys, Brandon Cooks or Golden Tate, you'd assume that, hey, you know, Cooks is obviously the high upside guy and you know, Golden Tate's, you know, that floor, you know, more consistent type of player. Not the case. So doing a little research, and as this kind of gets off the Rams comparing him to Golden Tate, but I think it's important information. So Cooks versus Golden Tate, three-year average. So how often do these players finish as wide receiver one or two? So finish as a top 24 receiver. Cooks finishes a top 24 receiver 43.75% of the time. Golden Tate finishes a wide receiver 24 or better 33% of the time. So that's the three-year average. Now let's take a look at just – and then looking at how in the same span – how many times did they finish outside the top 48? So essentially, how many times did they, like, seriously bust? Cooks, 37.5% of the time. Golden Tate, 47.92% of the time. So, Andrew, so you're telling me that Golden Tate busts more than Brandon Cooks? That is correct. Don't buy into the whole Golden Tate's more consistent and has a safe floor because it's not true. Brandon Cooks has been more consistent of a receiver than Golden Tate was. And I got no problem with Golden Tate. I think he's a great player. He always puts up 1,000 yards. But his consistency is more over a season. But if you look at his actual game logs, it's not really like that. He's a little bit less inconsistent. And then just looking at last year specifically, they were the same. Wide receiver, they both finished as top 24 receivers 50% of the time. So you put them in your lineup, half the time they were mini top 24. Half the time, they were going to finish outside the top 24. But, and then again, in terms of the bust rate, you know, where they finished outside the top 48, Cooks was 37.5%, whereas Tate was 43.75%. So, once again, Tate was busting more than Brandon Cooks was. So, I mean, for me, I would take Brandon Cooks over Golden Tate, and I hope that this has kind of, you know, driven you that way in terms of consistency, because Brandon Cooks also has that upside because he is a big play guy. That's not really in Golden Tate's – that's not really in his arsenal. So that's why I really like – that's why I like Brandon Cooks a little bit more, and I think that people are sleeping on him a little bit. I don't think that you need to be super concerned about his workload. And apparently Sean McVay loves the dude. And they're going to be running a lot of 11 personnel. So Cooks, Woods, and Kupp are going to be on the field all the time. The Rams actually ran 11 personnel 81% of the time last season, which was the most in the league. So they're really all starters. It's not like one of them is going to be a backup. All right, now moving on to so two more teams, guys, that are left here. One of my favorite, and I didn't talk about Jared Goff, but I guess I'll talk about him before. I don't really like him that much. I think that he's totally based on his matchups that he plays. And the thing is with him, so he's going as the quarterback 13. Phillip Rivers is going as the quarterback 14. Like, it's not even like a debate for me who I would take. It's Phillip Rivers. So, on to the next one. The Miami Dolphins. Dude, Kenny Stills is my freaking dude. Kenny Stills. Big breakout season coming in. 105 targets last season. Led the team in targets. Devontae Parker has a broken finger, and he sucks anyway. Danny Amendola only performs in the playoffs. And then Albert Wilson is actually pretty good. I actually think Albert Wilson can do some stuff. That's what we've seen in the preseason games, at least. Tannehill's been targeting Albert Wilson, you know, a pretty heavy amount. Kenny Stills didn't play in the last preseason game, but we did see it was kind of Albert Wilson that was getting a lot of the targets and a lot of the work. So I do like Albert Wilson as a late-round pick. I mean, he's basically going undrafted, basically across drafts. But the guy that I really want to target is Kenny Stills. He's a deep threat guy. He led the team in targets a season ago. He didn't lead the team. He's second in the team in targets. Jarvis Landry led the team in targets. But you have a giant void with Jarvis Landry gone. So I really like Kenny Stills' potential in this offense. They led the league in passing attempts last season. And with Adam Gase finally getting the chance to, you know, unleash Ryan Tannehill, I think that there's an opportunity here for Stills to really blow up as much as possible for the Miami Dolphins. You know, look at their season as a whole last year. Basically, everything went wrong. They had no bye week. They had no rest after the London games. They had a hurricane week one. Like, nothing. Their quarterback got hurt, like, 2 weeks before the season. They signed Jay Cutler. Like, they had nothing to go right for them. They still went 6-10. So I actually think that they can do better than that this season. It's not out of this world, depending on, because they have so many other factors that they don't actually have to go through. And it was like Adam Gase kind of gets a pass last year because he hasn't really had an opportunity to do anything really effectively. And Ryan Tannehill was having his best season last year before he got hurt, starting with 8-5 record, and then they made the playoffs. They went 10-6. So I do expect the Dolphins to actually increase productivity from last season, and they did kind of ship out some guys, got rid of Sue, they got rid of Landry, hopes to kind of corral the locker room a little bit more. But I do think that there is going to be improvement for Miami, and a lot of people don't think that, but you just look at it as a whole. I mean, everything went wrong last year, and now they don't have to deal with a lot of that stuff. But, so like I said, they were the heaviest pass team, you know. That's why I think that Stills has an opportunity to, you know, get more passing attempts or catch more targets. Landry's gone. The personnel they're going to run is 11 personnel, you know, pretty common among these NFL teams. But Stills will be on the outside with Wilson and Amendola. This Wilson's kind of been moving a little bit of everywhere with Parker out. Parker will probably be on the outside. But, I mean, if it's him between Parker, I mean, Parker's hurt. So if it's between him and Wilson and Amendola, I mean, Stills is going to beat those guys out. He's already been there. He's already developed relationships with Tannehill. So I really like, there's no one really to like dominate any type of targets for him. So, and he's going as the wide receiver 46, 12th, 13th round. Devontae Parker's going as the wide receiver 42, 10th or 11th. Tannehill's going as QB 30, who really, like, he's a guy, like I'm saying, in the QB 16 league, take Tannehill and Keenum. Just watch me win. And I'll have absolute garbage quarterbacks and I'll win because the so deep. You can literally win with anybody at quarterback, as long as you know what you're doing in terms of your matchups. Mike Gesicki is a tight end 23. So the tight end position, so with Gesicki, you know, everyone argues the fact that rookie tight ends usually don't break out. It's a fact. It's just they're not blocking. But we saw also that the kind of way around that is the void of targets. If there's nobody else there, then those rookie tight ends become assets to those teams. With Evan Ingram last year. So, is there a chance that Mike Gesicki could kind of fill that Evan Ingram role? I say, yeah. There's definitely a chance of that. I wouldn't say, you know, invest in him super highly in the beginning of the season. I think it's going to take some time. And if more injuries pile up, especially as Amendola is probably going to get hurt eventually, because he always does, and the Dolphins probably aren't going to make the playoffs, so that's really when he's his best. So, Gesicki's a guy to keep your eye on at the tight end position, because I think there's a void. It's different from like a guy like Dallas Goedert, who, you know, Zach Ertz is right in front of him. So it's not as easy as, oh, just slide him in there. He'll be good to go. Look at Mike Gesicki. Take him in the late rounds. And then if he's not panning out, not getting targets, then, you know, get rid of him. But I do think there is an opportunity there. So don't just say, you know, hey, well, rookie tight ends, because, you know, that's kind of a tunnel vision. Because we saw it last year. It happened. And is it recency bias to say it'll happen again? Well, maybe a little bit, but then again, it's like, well, you know, we want to take every factor into consideration. I mean, O.J. Howard had some good games last season. So you want to, you know, take it all in, take as much data as you can as possible to make the best decision. And, you're getting him as tight end 23. So, I mean, if it's him and Joe Schmo, like, you know, he's a guy who's a starting tight end. So, you know at least that much. And then Kenyon Drake going as the RB 17, end of the third, top of the fourth round. So Kenyon Drake is in that class of Derrick Henry and Alex Collins, Jay Ajayi, and the running back group. I really hate drafting and taking guys on Javonte receiver in that, like, section of players. So Kenyon Drake, I don't like Drake that much just because I don't like the offense as a whole for Miami. I think that they'll be better than last year, but I'm not so sure you can rely on him. They signed Frank Gore. I understand that he has the, you know, work back potential, but I just think there's a lot of question marks around him, and I'm not so sure how much I trust him. I mean, he was behind Jay Ajayi, you know, and he only got really a lot of targets when Damian Williams got down, and how often he's going to be used in the passing game. It's just, I mean, I'm taking Alex Collins over him. I'm taking some other guys over him. So I'm just not in love with Kenyon Drake, but you may love him, and we'll find out. And these Alabama running backs just seem to just fizzle out all the time. The last team you talk about here, guys, as we're wrapping up things, the Houston Texans. Texas. Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins and Lamar Miller. So, Deshaun Watson, the biggest thing surrounding him is obviously his regression. It's just bound to happen. I mean, as going as a quarterback too, like, I still don't understand how it's still happening, because it's like, do people, like, not, like, read books or, like, go on the internet? Like, it's hard to just be like, yeah, he's going to do exactly what he did last year, because nobody's ever done that before. No one. So I definitely see him regressing. I'm not touching him in any of my drafts. I actually have him on a dynasty team because someone traded Patrick Mahomes for him straight up. And if it was between those two, like in a vacuum, yeah, I'll take Deshaun Watson because I've already seen him play in the NFL at an elite level. We haven't seen that from Patrick Mahomes. So, and it's like, it was kind of a, at first I was like, wait, what? But then I was like, all right. So I have some shares of Deshaun Watson, but like not ones that I've drafted. So I'm not going to probably draft him in any leagues because he's going too high. And I'm going to wait on a quarterback. That being said, DeAndre Hopkins, top receiver. I mean, no problem taking him in the first round. He's probably going to, again, do what he usually does and just and rips it up. Rips up the NFL because he's a freaking animal. Then it goes to Will Fuller. So Will Fuller, interestingly enough, talking about consistency. So last season, he finished as a wide receiver 1 30% of the time. Top 12. 60% of the time, he finished outside the top 48. Bad. Most of the, and I'm pretty sure every single time that he finishes as a wide receiver 1 was with Deshaun Watson. So, Deshaun Watson's back. Will Fuller is the ultimate boom or bust play. Right now, he's going as the wide receiver 32, 7th or 8th round. And I don't like it. Because you're going to have to start him every week, and you're going to have to just deal with the death. Unless you can feel confident, like, knowing when you're going to start. But, like, that's so... It's like, we think we know how easy it is. Because we look at the matchups, like, oh, like, they're better than the pass. Like, got to start him. And sometimes it works, but sometimes it doesn't. And you're going to get pissed at yourself when you don't start him. Unless, like, you're, like, so, no, start him in the flex. No matter what. Doesn't matter. Unless he's playing, like, a really, really bad matchup. But that's my two cents on the ignatic Will Fuller, if that's even a word. Then moving to the running back position, Lamar Miller, going as the RB22. So I really like Lamar Miller. You know, the Deshaun Watson-led Texans have the easiest schedule on paper this season, according to Warren Sharp in the Pro Football 2018 preview. This is based on just the teams that they're playing, you know, projecting. This isn't just based on last year's stats. It's based on the division they're playing. And remember, they finished last in the division. So that's kind of a reason why it's a team you want to look into, because these last place teams face the last place teams of all the other divisions. So they're going to be playing bad teams for the most part. They play their own division, which has improved a lot, but still has a lot of question marks. Mariota, they have a new head coach. Jacksonville has question marks, you know, with their quarterback specifically. Is Bortles, you know, really going to be their guy forever? And then Indianapolis. So there's a lot of, you know, potential there for them to, you know, be competing, but they also have leads. And the biggest thing is game script for running back position. When they get the lead, running backs do really well. Lamar Miller also averaged 5 more fantasy points per game with Deshaun Watson than without Deshaun Watson. So that's just another reason why Lamar Miller is a guy you can get cheap going in the, you know, RB22. So you get him in like the fifth, sixth round. And I like that. I'd rather take a receiver over that group of like 4 running backs that I talked about before, trying to guess which one is going to hit because chances are they're not all going to hit, and probably one or two of them is going to bust. And to take Lamar Miller, who's probably not going to bust, probably is not going to break out, but is going to have a steady season as my running back two. So if you go zero RB, Lamar Miller's got a target because there's really no one else to compete with him. Alfred Blue is there, but Deontay Foreman is still dealing with an Achilles injury, which is an injury that's really hard to come back from. So I'm not super confident that he's going to come back, and at least it's going to be 6 weeks that Lamar Miller's going to be the main guy. So unless Lamar Miller totally sucks for 6 weeks, then I don't see them just being like, hey, Deontay Foreman, here you go. Here's the keys to the kingdom. It's time to drive. Woo! Don't see that happening. You know, some notes from the preseason game from the Texans. Bruce Ellington's tearing it up. Get this guy friggin' some type of beef Wellington, man. This guy was ripping it in the slot. I mean, their starting receivers are Hopkins on the outside with Fuller, and then Bruce Ellington in the slot, who's looking really well. And then a tight end to keep an eye on. You know, Ryan Griffin was making some flashes. He's a really good blocker. But Steven Anderson is an interesting guy. You know, he flashed a little bit last year, but Deshaun Watson actually had a high success rate targeting him. Not Hopkins, not Fuller, but him last season. So Steven Anderson, if he's able to, I mean, he's a converted wide receiver. So, you know, we're seeing this a lot from a lot of these guys. You know, they're tight ends that just don't really block. They're just tight ends because they're, like, bigger. But they just become, you know, those guys that you can hit down the stream, making it super simple for the receiver or to the quarterbacks to get them and get them downfield. So a lot of potential there from Steven Anderson. I remember him last year. I remember I picked him up, and he blew a start for me, and I was, like, really pissed off about it. So, like, he's dead to me. But don't forget about him. He did have some games where he flashed last season, so you want to make sure that that gets in check. Last thing to point out about the Texans, their offensive line. You know, most people have them ranked as probably the worst offensive line in the league, which basically was last year, and has to accumulate to what happened to Deshaun Watson getting hurt. And that's a big thing with Deshaun Watson. So him from a clean pocket, 124 passer rating. From when pressure, 71. That's part of the reason why Deshaun Watson, you know, people forget, but he threw a lot of interceptions last year. But a lot of it's because of the pressure and, you know, pressure in his face. But he was able to make plays because he's a mobile quarterback. But the Texans did make some changes on their O-line. Not really huge changes, but changes in an effort to get better. And for the most part, I don't know if they can be worse. They were terrible last year, and I think that there will be some improvements, especially as O'Brien, you know, has had a full offseason to basically design the offense around Deshaun Watson, as opposed to last season where we were there like, yeah, they basically had like a week to like figure it out. And you have, you know, Tom Savage, you know, he's a starter. So we'll see. Deshaun Watson is definitely one of the players I want to watch most this season just because, you know, everyone is expecting him to do worse. But realistically, he's probably still going to do pretty well. It's just not nearly as outlandish as he was doing last year because that's really hard to predict. We see this from all players. You know, all players have outlier seasons that are just their production is out of this world, and it sucks because you want to see them consistently improve, but I don't know if Watson can really go up from where he did last year, but I still think that he'll be, you know, a steady quarterback, but I'm not going to buy him at his price for what he's at right now. So, and the last being said as well, you know, with Bill O'Brien, the Texans have ranked top 12 in rushing attempts the last four seasons. So Lamar Miller is going to eat that volume, baby. He's going to feast on that volume. So that wraps us up, guys, for today. It's been, doing the podcast, you know, trying to get, you know, you guys as much information for your drafts as possible. So hope you enjoy it. Please tweet at me at @AndrewErickson_. And I'll have some more, you know, games out or more teams out this week, 32 and 32. So I'm trying to finish them up, you know, obviously before the season starts, which is why I started doing more, like, teams per episode because it's like, oh, God, like, I'm going to be on, like, the last day and it's going to be, oh, here's your team preview. It's like, well, they play tomorrow. Like, that doesn't help me. So I'm trying to finish out the rest of these teams so you guys can use them as your fantasy advice. But, you know, please tweet at me at @AndrewErickson_. And you can find my stuff on FullPressCoverage.com. Thanks.